Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 15 of season 3. It's a big one. This one's called Yesterday's Enterprise. It was directed by David Carson. The teleplay credit goes to Iris Stephen Bear, Richard Manning, Hans Beimler, and Ronald D. Moore. The story credit goes to Trent Ganino and Eric Stillwell. It was aired back on February 19th, 1990. In this one, the crew of the Enterprise C, the predecessor to the Enterprise D, travels back in time and alters the timeline, resulting in the rebirth of Tosh E.R., and the crew has to debate what to do with the Enterprise C, either to send them back to fix the timeline or keep them around. It's not much of a decision, really. But anyway, Clay's going to be around to join us to talk about this one. And right after this audio break, we're going to get into Yesterday's Enterprise.
It's clearing now, Captain. Definitely Federation starship. Accessing registry.
Looks like they had a rough ride.
NCC 1701C. USS... Enterprise.
So, Clay, I think I realized something. I came to a conclusion today.
Okay.
Remember how a couple episodes ago in the podcast we were talking about that guy on Reddit who I said something about Neutral Zone and he said you should listen to Clay McCormick's podcast?
Yes.
I think that was Guinan in the alternate timeline of our lives. Where if something...
Wait, do I have to die in order to straighten out the timeline?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I don't know how we go about rectifying that, but yeah, that is the alternate timeline of our lives, and we need to figure out how to get back to that spot.
Well, I mean, we could just stay here if you want.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, this timeline doesn't seem too bad, actually.
No, I mean, you know, there's a successful podcast, you know, hosted by a very charming, insightful person, and you're here too.
Oh, well, Clay, I have something to say, actually. The podcast is going much worse than is generally understood.
I hope you looked to your left and right in a very shifty manner before you said that.
I did. It didn't record, but I'll dub it in on top of the video. Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, obviously, if people can't understand what we're doing, we're talking about Yesterday's Enterprise today. Just a little bit of background here. I'm sort of a contrarian by nature. People on Twitter probably think that I read the Drudge Report for my news, and my right-wing in-laws probably think that I have a framed picture of Stalin hanging in my bedroom. But that's basically the way I go about it, is I like to find flaws in people's arguments. And so I went into this one thinking, I'm going to watch this episode, and I'm going to pick out all the flaws that I can find to show how smart I am compared to everybody else.
Of course.
And I think I failed on my mission. So, okay. What do you think about Yesterday's Enterprise?
Five. End the episode. On to the next one. Five.
We're done. Yeah, the audio clip I'll drop.
I think this is a great episode. I do actually have some small issues with it. But generally, I think, like, as far as time travel goes, this is one of the tightest time travel stories I've ever seen.
Yep.
It's shot really nicely. It's got a really engaging plot. It has some weight to it because they're dealing with the death of Tasha Yar that was never really satisfactorily addressed when it happened.
Yep.
And it's just overall, it's got Shooter McGavin in it. this is rightfully so. This is one of the best episodes.
Yeah, it's always considered to be one of the top five episodes. Whenever you look at a list that anyone's compiled, as I've said before, it's generally either one or two. It probably alternates between this and Best of Both Worlds, which is also in season three.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, so those are...
You know, I actually realized, I think you might be right about us living in an alternate timeline.
How's
because
that?
I just noticed I have a really sweet belt that I didn't have last week.
Is it all bejeweled with like gold glitter?
Yeah, it really serves no functional purpose, but it's awesome.
Oh, good, excellent. Yeah, that's the now, since you brought up the belt, I think this might be really boring to talk about, but I think one of the things that makes this episode really kind of amazing is how the set design is really quite excellent in what they chose to do. Like you mentioned that they all have guns. You know, they totally redesigned the bridge to sort of fit the theme of Picard is in charge and no one else is really on his level. There's only one chair.
Right.
The lighting is subdued. Everything is very dark. There are blues. Like, blue is the dominant color as opposed to the sort of yellow of modern Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that... I guess we should get the background out of the way first. The script is generally considered to be sort of an outlier because it was written over the course of a weekend by four different people who each took a sort of plot line and then they just mashed them together.
Interesting.
So there was a...
I was just going to say, I feel like it's really clear which plot line Ronald Moore was attached to.
Oh, which one do you think he wrote?
Anything that involves the busted up ship and no lights being on. Because this feels like it could have been an episode of Battlestar Galactica.
Ronald D. Moore actually wrote the Yar subplot. Like,
no!
He wrote the romance.
Seriously?
Yeah, so
I'm just going to get out of the way right now. That is the worst part of the episode. And it really pains me to say that.
Okay, let's put a pin in that for a second. Okay. I'm going to come back to that. So let me run through. Basically, what happened was that this idea was written originally. They took two spec scripts from people who were not on staff that had submitted scripts to the show, which was an open policy by Michael Piller at the time.
Oh.
He took two separate scripts from people not on staff. The first one was from a guy named Ganino. And it was about a appearance of an Enterprise from the past, which comes to the future. And Picard and the crew have this dilemma about whether to return the ship or not. And the main conflict is that the crew of the other ship, they're trying to be kept away from the fact that they're in the future. And one of them finds out that he's in the future, freaks out, and the crew has to like capture him, wipe his mind, and send him back to the past.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
So the other story was... And in that version, Yar returns because she is in this alternate timeline. But there's no other difference between the timelines besides the fact that she's returned.
Uh-huh.
The other one is that Vulcans are doing a science experiment and they find a way to... they go back. They sort of screw up time. They go back in time. And the founder of Vulcan philosophy, who's a guy named Surok, is accidentally killed. And so the Vulcans in the future become basically Romulans. They're warlike instead
of really?
Illogical. So what they do is Sarek, who is Spock's father, is sent back in time to take the place of Surok, sort of pretending to be him to reset the timeline. So the Sarek from our timeline goes back to fix the other timeline to make our timeline normal again.
Wow, that sounds really familiar.
Yeah. yeah. So what they did was they smashed these two scripts together, and they brought back Yar as a way to do it. It was written over the course of Thanksgiving weekend. Four different people. You can see that in the credits. Michael Piller gets an uncredited rewrite on it. He did a final polish on the script.
Mm-hmm.
And the writers were generally not happy with the script, which is kind of funny.
Really?
Seeing as I think it's pretty tight, but their general feedback after was that we didn't think this was going to be good. We wrote it too quickly. We didn't have a chance to rewrite, and it was four people just jamming shit together.
That's really interesting, because like I said, as far as the core concepts go and the execution of those ideas, it is pretty tight. I mean, I don't really know what they would have changed that much.
No. That's the same thing I was thinking. I think the script is really tight. It's it could maybe use a trim, although every trim I suggest would probably not be necessary. I think it's more a fact of how the production... Michael Piller mentioned this in a quote. He said the production team, post-production team, really saved us on this one with all the amount of work that they did, which is... Or not even post-production, but the post and pre, or actual production with the filming and everything. So what you were talking about, the Yar subplot, how you didn't like it. Did you not like it? I didn't like it because, in my opinion, the weakest part of this episode is the acting of Denise Crosby.
I will go you one further. Excuse me. and say the weakest part of the episode is the acting of Shooter McGavin.
Oh, really? You think he's worse?
I think he's just so... I think he's miscast. I think I don't know if I'm just used to him playing a smug asshole.
Yep.
But I just don't buy him as like the you know, the lover character whatsoever.
Right. Yeah.
Denise Crosby is not great, but my bigger concern, or I should say, my bigger problem with the story is I don't really feel like it's a very I don't feel like they wrote Tasha Yar very particularly well for this episode, because. I feel like she, like, I don't know. She never felt like the kind of character that would be immediately smitten by a dashing lieutenant and then start making out with him in the transporter room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I could see that. I could see that relationship being like kind of implied.
Yep.
And Yar sticking to her guns and being, you know, because that's just not the kind of character she was.
Well, here's be my counter argument to that. We're in an alternate timeline where all the characters are a little bit different from what you'd expect. You know, Picard is much angrier and much more forceful in this alternate timeline.
Yeah, I guess you're
so
right.
So I guess you could argue that the Yar character is going to be a slightly altered version of whatever she was.
Well... Okay, well, I'll give you that, but on the counterpoint to that, if anything, Tasha Yar growing up in a Starfleet that is embroiled in war is not going to make her more lovey-dovey. She's already she's already hard-edged to begin with in a Starfleet that is, you know, basically a flying peace ship.
Yep.
So for her to be, you know, I'm surprised that they didn't bring her back with like scars on her face. You know, she should be extra hard. You know.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. I just think that it's kind of a weakness of the character only being around for whatever she was, 20 episodes in the first season. And really,
yeah.
The point of this episode is really to sort of redo Skin of Evil, which is objectively a terrible episode.
Yes.
And they do that in a way that I really think it's her. Maybe Shooter McGavin is miscast, but Crosby in this is going up against people who are just crushing her in every single scene.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a letdown. Like, you know, you've got Whoopi Goldberg Stewart, the woman who plays Captain Garrett, is very good. And she's sort of, she looks like a deer in headlights in a lot of the scenes. And it's just like, I feel it could have been a little bit better. The only other point I'll add before I let you talk a little bit more is, I feel this episode suffers very slightly from the fact that they have to be 42 minutes long.
It's funny you should say that because I've watched this episode maybe before today. I've watched it maybe two or three times in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I put it on in my head, I think it's a two-parter.
Yep.
I don't know why that is. It just feels like the story is bigger than 40 minutes allows.
Yeah. And, you know, to get around it, they have the scene where Picard calls the conference with all the senior staff and tells them that he's sending the Enterprise C back.
Right.
Yar walks out of it and has some sort of epiphany that she doesn't belong there, which makes no sense. Like, there's no reason she should be thinking that. They had to do it to cause her to go talk to Guinan, you know?
Yeah. She comes to the conclusion that she needs to die very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do. So, is there anything else you want to talk about before we kind of get into it? Or
no, we'll let Fly talk about whatever you want.
Okay. Well, one of the other things I found interesting. First of all, what's up with that first scene where Worf is just talking with Guinan about banging chicks?
It's an awesome scene. Is she hitting on him, or I don't understand?
I don't know.
It's memorable for it's the first time Worf has laughed.
Yeah. Oh, is it really?
Yeah. That's the. He's mentioned before that human females are fragile. He's actually said that before in a previous episode.
Right. Right.
So it's kind of a. I felt they had to put it because he can't exist in the main storyline of this story.
That's what occurred to me the second time I watched it. It's actually, even though even though that scene doesn't have any purpose for the rest of the episode, what it does is it starts your point of view on Worf. So the next scene when he ends up on the bridge and they do that really well choreographed or well blocked shot of Picard being in the foreground and then turning away.
Yep.
So you can see Worf, and then they do the same thing, and he turns away, and you see Tasha Yar.
Yeah,
it's a very good storytelling device to show you exactly how everything has changed.
Yes, yep.
However, I will say what they should have done is they should have had Worf and Guinan at the end as well, instead of Guinan and Geordi.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, especially because if anybody... I thought the... Well, I think they should have done that, especially because Worf had the closest relationship with her when she was on the ship.
That's true, yeah.
And I thought that scene initially, the very first scene, I thought the implication... The first time I saw it, I thought the implication was maybe like, oh, well, you know, maybe he's still kind of upset about her death or something. Especially,
oh, right.
You know, like, not explicitly saying that, but... You know, because they clearly had some sort of a connection, and, you know, the talk about, you know, you should find some companionship is, you know, clearly talking about finding a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they're trying to imply that, you know, he's still, whether or not it's a romantic thing, he still is broken up, or at least affected by her death.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's also compounded by, I think Geordi might have had the least close connection to Tasha Yar. You know, it's like... The two that would make sense would be Worf and Data, I think.
Right,
And they do neither at the end. That is weird. That would have been a nice way to sort of tie the bow on the episode, to have it just sort of reset with Worf back on the 10 forward having a drink. Would have made a lot more sense.
You know, I guess the reason they go with Geordi is because when Guinan contacts the bridge at the end, Worf is already on the bridge.
Yeah.
So they can't realistically cut to her and then have her sit down with Worf. But, I mean, there's no reason that it would have to be a linear, like a jump cut like that. It could, you know.
Right,
anyway,
yeah.
I think narratively it would have been a nicer touch to have to Worf at the end with her.
Yeah, yeah. That's
especially if you're going on, yeah, Geordi never really knew her. So it's like, Geordi, tell me about Tasha Yar. And then the episode ends, but it continues with Geordi going, well, be frank, I didn't really know her. I actually, you know, I got to get going, so I'll see you later.
There's a funny, like, a blooper from that scene is, you know, Guinan just says, Geordi, can you tell me about Tasha Yar? And they just kind of look at each other. Mm-hmm. In the blooper, there's obviously nothing scripted. And so it's just them sitting there looking at each other until someone says cut. Mm-hmm. And the director does not say cut for a little while. So it's this awkward thing of them looking. And Guinan's like, boy, I'm fucking talking to you. Very, very funny, like, little thing. I know there's a lot of Whoopi Goldberg blooper reel stuff that's very funny.
Yeah. Tell me about Tasha Yar. Well, not really. I don't
know. There's the, you know, it's, let's see, the, I did want to talk a little bit more about set design here, I think, because it's really kind of clever. One of my, you know, I made a list of all the stuff I noticed. You can pick one that you want to talk about. Bridge design, lighting, the armed crew. And for some reason, there is actually, if you count all the crew members that have made an appearance in every previous episode of the show, I think the amount of crew in this episode exceeds that number. There are crew members everywhere in this episode.
Mm, yes. They're all over the place.
The set design in general is good. The map display in Picard's ready room was...
Oh, I love that thing.
It's such a great foreshadow because it shows the Klingon and Federation forces, and the Klingons are clearly outnumbering the Federation, but they haven't admitted at that point that things are going badly. Mm-hmm. That was cool. The Riker-Picard relationship is interesting in this one.
Yeah, Riker's... It's a lot more heated.
Yes, it's very combative between the two of them.
Yes,
yeah.
I did, not to jump in, but
sure.
I did want to mention there's an interesting thing that they do I'll just say it. We've talked about this before, excuse me, how Guinan is sort of a better crafted version of Troi.
Yes.
Troi is noticeably absent in this episode. She is not on the ship in the alternate timeline.
No, she's only sitting on the she has no lines, but is sitting on the bridge in the real timeline. But she's not in the alternate timeline.
Right, and I find that very interesting because it sort of, you know, highlights kind of what we've talked about, in that they kind of serve the same purpose. And I think if Troy had been around in this episode, it would have made things a lot more complicated.
Probably. I mean, I'd have to assume she's just busy. It seems like a counselor would be more necessary on a warship than on a feast time ship.
That's true.
But yeah, she... There wouldn't have been... I don't know if she would have been able to sense anything different, but she probably would have confused... Because her presence would sort of give Picard an out to talk to somebody besides Guinan.
Right.
Which I don't think he needed in this episode. Yeah, which is interesting. Obviously, continuing on, Picard is a different character as a wartime captain. Mm-hmm. There's no Worf. Maybe the greatest alternate to characterization is that Wesley is, like, highly competent and not annoying whatsoever.
Well, I actually really like that because it, you know, I noticed that he was in a uniform, and it occurred to me that, oh, well, it makes sense that in wartime they probably would accelerate people through Starfleet, through the academy, to get them onto a ship. And that made a lot of sense. I thought that was a really nice ad.
Yeah, and my last note for a difference is I loved the new conference room, and the conference room table in particular, where there's no chairs, is awesome. Oh,
yeah. that sweet black glass table.
Yeah, that's right, shiny. And also, I think Picard is doing more tablet work than he's ever done in any episode of this. He is constantly looking at shit on his tablet.
And they also, I think it's the conference room, they had that awesome design thing where it was the Enterprise in the middle and then like a bunch of like blue squares and shit emanating from the center. That was really cool. I like that thing a lot.
Yeah, it's just, I guess my general point is they did a ton of stuff that's somewhat pretty carefully, you know. They could have just lowered the lights on the bridge and been like, this is the alternate timeline. But they added a lot of stuff that when you go back and review is really kind of impressive, especially considering how quickly the script was done and how quick production had to be.
Right. Do you know how much of that stuff was pre-existing sets? Because it's clear that the... So one thing I thought was kind of weird, and I figured it was just a due to... you know, budgetary restraints or whatever, is that the people on the Enterprise C are wearing basically repurposed costumes from whatever movie they were shooting at the time.
Yep, yep.
Except they're not wearing the neck piece, so it doesn't look like they have that turtleneck thing on. It's just the red tunic.
Yeah, it's sort of less navally looking. They basically took away the collar on the older uniforms.
Right. And I just found it interesting that the uniforms and the weaponry changed so drastically in 20 years.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, and that's you know, regardless of timeline, that's just the way it is. I mean, they even cut back to a lot of the admirals wear the old stuff. But I just found it interesting that it makes sense that they couldn't design an entire ship's worth of new costumes for these people that were going to be just blown up.
That's true. And it's sort of in canon because the TNG crew has changed their uniform, I think, three times over the course of 3 years. So maybe they operate at a high level of uniform turnover or something.
Yeah, and I mean, as we go forward, I mean, once Voyager starts, everything that happens after every like movie or anything that happens after Voyager starts has the different pin that has the rectangle instead of the circle.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, they change uniforms every movie. So
yes, and they start wearing undershirts instead of one piece uniforms. They're clearly wearing like a turtleneck undershirt and then a uniform over it.
Yeah, I was also curious. There's a little bit of dialogue where Tasha is telling Shooter McGavin about. He does not have a name in this episode. He is Shooter McGavin.
I think just to clarify, his name is Castillo, I think. Yes. Okay. Yeah. But it is funny to call him Shooter McGavin. That is the only thing I recognize him from.
Where she's telling him about how the Enterprise D has improved whatever and is faster and more powerful than the C.
Yep.
And I was wondering if what she was saying was any different. I mean, this is a stupid nerd, you know, deep level nerd thing to ask.
Let's get into it.
Well, I was wondering if the stuff that she was talking about was if the Enterprise D in this timeline was any more powerful than the Enterprise D in the regular timeline.
I think that's the implication.
Okay, because I found that interesting because I was not to go on a complete tangent here, but I was I went to the Alamo this past a couple months ago.
Sure.
And there was a guy there who was doing a thing all about firearms through history and stuff like that.
Yep.
And one of the things that he pointed out was pistol technology had not moved in 100 years. They had made no advancements in pistol technology until the expansion into the West. And then once the Americans started expanding into the West, the pistol went from basically the same kind of flintlock pistol they would have used on like a pirate ship,
yep,
to a modern style cylinder cartridge weapon in 30 years.
Right.
And I it was completely based off the necessity. So I found it, I was kind of interested in whether or not the Enterprise D in wartime would have been an overly powered ship that had much more technology behind it.
Well, there's the line Tasha says that they actually in this timeline eat rations because all
right.
the power from the replicators has to be diverted to the weapon systems.
Right.
So
right.
they're forced to eat like, you know, astronaut ice cream and stuff like that instead of the replicated whatever you want in peacetime. So I think that is the implication that this ship. That was kind of maybe it's a minor complaint, but I would have altered the actual ship, you know, if I had done a little bit of something, maybe make it a little bit more bulky or something.
Yeah.
In the
I was actually thinking that when the Klingons show up, I was like, oh, the Klingon ships, if they put like an extra fin on top or something,
right?
You know, just to change the design up a little bit. Speaking of design, I don't know if it was a pre-existing design, but I love the design of the Enterprise C.
Oh, okay, I think this is the first appearance of the Enterprise C.
Yeah, it's a nice blend of the old movie style and the new. It literally looks like they stuck the hyperdrive fins onto an old model.
Yeah,
but, I mean,
yeah,
it works. I like it. It looks
yeah,
cool.
It's basically it's like a shorter, squatter version of the D ship, like a sort of more primitive version looking, which makes sense. But yeah, I think because before this episode, the Enterprise C was the only ship that hadn't been seen, because you see the mm-hmm. A and the B in the movies, I'm pretty sure,
yep.
at this point. So the C was sort of a mystery as to where it came from. But yeah, it's I guess let's get into the plotting here. Or
yep.
Let's get into the plotting before we start anything else. So what I think really helps this script a lot is that they don't dilly-dally in explaining what the consequences of the C not going back to its timeline are.
Right.
I could have seen an episode where they didn't really reveal that until the end, and then, you know, maybe make the crew sort of ignorant of what they've done, which would have been a much less interesting story.
That's usually the kind of thing that you do at the end after everything goes back to normal.
Right.
And they're like, well, it seems like going back in time with the other ship righted the timeline. You
know, right.
That's like a last minute exposition thing.
Yes. Yep. But in this one, they're very clear from the beginning. They do a really wonderful job of leaving the breadcrumbs of information, though, because, like, for example, they don't Picard doesn't reveal that the war is going badly until basically right before they leave.
Right.
And before that, you know, Data drops the thing. He's like, there's zero probability that the Enterprise C will survive. So there's the stakes of now this is a suicide mission instead of just going back in time. Mm-hmm. The thing about Yar, you know, Yar going back makes more sense. She would be helpful to them. She doesn't really belong here. I think it's really just a very tight script, despite what the writers seem to think about it. I think everything here connects to each other, and there's no real mechanical problems that I could find.
Yeah, it's. I was thinking about it a little bit today, and I think what makes it work and actually makes it tighter is that. So, I mean, we could end up getting into some discussion about time travel theory here, but the fact that the point of view of the episode of the point of view of the story is from the people affected by the timeline change and not that of the time traveler.
I need more.
There is no more. I wish there were. I wish I could prove it, but I can't.
Then I can't ask them to go back.
You've got to.
Guinan, they will die moments after they return. How can I ask them to sacrifice themselves based solely on your intuition?
I don't know. But I do know that this is a mistake.
Every fiber in my being says this is a mistake. I can't explain it to myself, so I can't explain it to you. I only know that I'm right.
Who is to say that this history is any less proper than the other?
I suppose I am.
Not good enough, damn it! Not good enough! I will not ask them to die.
40 billion people have already died. This war is not supposed to be happening. You've got to send those people back to correct this.
And what is the guarantee that if they go back, they will succeed? Every instinct is telling me this is wrong, it is dangerous, it is futile.
We've known each other a long time. You have never known me to impose myself on anyone or take a stance based on trivial or whimsical perceptions. This timeline must not be allowed to continue. Now, I've told you what you must do. You have only your trust in me to help you decide to do it.
Not to skip on your point, we'll stick to it, but mm-hmm. whose episode is this?
I mean, it has to be Yar's episode. I mean, they spend the most amount of time with her.
Okay.
And I mean, I guess you could maybe say Guinan, but she's sort of there as like a guidepost.
Yep.
Guidepost. I don't even know if it's a word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, she's like a trail marker or something, basically, to figure out what's gone wrong. I'd have a hard time. It truly feels... I could almost argue it's a Picard thing as well, because he makes a lot of the decisions that are going on in this. I don't know if he's sort of the driving factor yeah. that makes them, but he's
making the decisions, but the actions that are being taken that really affect change are Yar's.
Are Yar's, yeah. So, yeah, all right, I'll agree. Maybe I think I came into this one a little bit more cloudy about whose it was, but I suppose it definitely is Yar's.
Yeah, because everything that Picard does, he's spurred on to do by either Guinan or Yar.
Yeah.
He never says, oh, well, I am working out in my own brain that this needs to happen. It's always, this needs to happen, Picard. And he's like, I don't want to do that. Well, you have to. Okay, I guess. We'll do that.
You know, I noticed something. I've watched this episode so many times. I watched it the most recent time. I noticed something that I think is just a happy accident. But mm-hmm. You could, you know, if you wrote this, you'd be like, oh yeah, that was intentional. I wrote down, it's sort of ironic that the unilateral decision that Picard makes to send them back is only possible in this alternate war timeline. Because everyone else on the crew is saying, this is a terrible idea, we can't send them back. And mm-hmm. Picard has that line of, this is a briefing, not a conference, or whatever he says. You're going to do what I say. Which is something that I don't think real timeline Picard would do. Does that make any sense? Like, his unilateral decision to do this is only possible because they're in some sort of weird timeline.
Yeah, I think. I don't know. I feel like he could... Are you saying just because of a character standpoint or just like a chain of command standpoint?
No, just because of the way that this Picard is, where he's like, my word is the final word. I'm not going to listen to anybody. All your opinions don't matter because I'm in charge. That is not the normal Picard mode.
That's true. That is a good point. Yeah. Neither is leaping over the corner of the console to take over the guns.
I wish that hadn't happened, but it was, you know, let me, no, we'll stick to that again. Remind me to bring that up,
okay,
actually.
All right. But yeah, no, I would agree that probably he wouldn't have made the decision I think he still would have made the decision. I just don't think he would have done it in that way.
Right. Maybe the other crew members would have had different dispositions toward it. I mean, Riker seems like he's just going to go against whatever Picard says in this alternate timeline.
Yeah.
That seems to be his MO, I guess, at this point, which is interesting. And reading interviews, the writer said that was totally intentional to have them at each other's, at odds with each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What do you think was the best scene in this show?
The best scene... probably the scene with Guinan and Picard in the conference room.
Oh, wow. I wrote down the exact same thing. That's interesting. What'd you like about it?
Well,
besides the fact that Patrick Stewart slams his tablet on the table.
See, that's the thing. I don't know if it's just that, because when I see that, it triggers memories of the, the trailer for First Contact.
Yep, yep.
Which is like one of the best trailers I've ever seen. Anyway.
It's no Picard with the Tommy guns screaming.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, no, I mean, it's just a really good piece of acting. And they're dealing with a really complicated concept and on a very
very little evidence.
Yeah, it's strange. I found it kind of weird that Guinan has enough pull with the captain to get that across and have him buy it.
Yeah, you know what I thought? If you watch this episode like I had before, if you've watched them out of order and you're more familiar with Guinan, mm-hmm. what she does in this episode makes more sense, but I'm not sure the series has actually earned his trust in her at this point. You know,
well, since it's an alternate timeline, Wes.
That's true. That's the one sort of reach that I thought, because I can't even really think of a Picard and Guinan scene that they've had to this point. Like, she's had it with other characters, but Picard is not... I guess if you want to argue it's an alternate timeline, that's the case, but it's really... It is sort of struck me as odd that he doesn't immediately buy into her, but he is very willing to listen to whatever she has to say.
Yeah. So here's a question. Does this story still work if instead of the thrust of it being Guinan telling Picard that all about the, you know, time weirdness and that he has to send the ship through, does it still work if she tells all that to Tasha and Tasha is the one who affects the decisions to make all that happen? So instead of going, like, say maybe, like, they don't, Guinan and Picard don't have that relationship where she can be like, hey, we're in an alternate timeline and you need to kill this ship full of people.
Yep.
And she goes to Tasha and explains that to her, and then Tasha is the one who brings the course of action to Picard. Does it still work?
Okay, two answers. On a technical, if I was producing the show level, I want more Stewart than Crosby.
Fair enough.
On a story level, you could probably pull that off. Would that make more sense? Would he? Because I could understand Picard trusting Yar more in this alternate timeline because he would have been familiar with her. She's been on the ship for 4 years, she claims.
Right.
I think so, but I think you need. Well, they sort of get around it because Guinan brings it up before she realizes that Tasha Yar is still alive.
Right, right.
So there's kind of an out that way, but I think I prefer the way the show does it, although I don't really have a good explanation as to why that would be.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, I was just kind of devil's advocating changing it a little bit. But, I think it could still work that way, but I think it's more, it's weird to say it's more believable this way, but I think it's made believable by Whoopi Goldberg and Patrick Stewart.
Yes, I think that's you know, the percent, that's what even, I would agree with.
Even though we haven't seen the relationship that they claim to have, you totally buy it.
Yes, yep.
I also would buy that in this situation, at this point of a war that's going very poorly, he would be open to weird shit.
Yes, that's also kind of the... Yeah, I mean, it's just really... Again, I don't know if it's intentional, but it's really clever plotting. It's like, because you reveal at this point, it's like, we got to hit and hope for a 10. You know, like, this is our best. Like, we're all in. We're either going broke or we're going to make it big.
The only change I think I might make, though, is I think I would make Picard's refusal to do it initially based more on a strategic war thing than just killing a ship full of people.
I'd agree with that, too, yeah.
Because when he comes to the captain of the other ship and he's like, listen, this war isn't going that well anyway and another ship isn't going to really help, if that's a realization that he comes to himself, mm-hmm. as opposed to just like it makes more sense character-wise for him to be like, no, we need another ship. We need all the ships we can get. We're losing this war. We need to have another ship that could fight. For then him to be like, honestly, it's not going to make a difference if we have another ship. We're fucked either way.
Yep, exactly.
I think that would be a more interesting
turn for his character.
Yeah. But I mean, that being said, I mean, that's a I don't think it's a huge issue.
No, I think that's, I mean, for everything that I'm bringing up with this show, I don't think you need to make that change. It's just kind of like, oh, I think it might be, you might improve the show, you know, a tenth of a percent if you made this one change. Which is probably not worth it in the long term. So let's get to the final act, which is basically the battle scene.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of the battle scene?
The battle scene really kind of pointed out one of the things that I think is the silliest thing about Star Trek is that so we live in the 20th century.
Yep.
And you can have ships fighting each other from miles and miles and miles away.
Yeah.
Why do you have to have four galaxy-class starships within, like, a rock's throw from each other?
Yeah. No, that's, and they also move very slowly.
Yeah. Like, why do you – you've got three Klingon warbirds, like, basically touching dicks.
Yep.
You know, shooting at the Enterprise. It's like, you should be able to do this from, like, half a light year away.
No, I think that's what the – I think technically that's the argument about what's happening, but they just can't scale it that well.
I was thinking that too, because there is the second time I watched it, Picard does have a line where he says, "Stay within 120 kilometers of the Enterprise C."
Yes.
So the distance is bigger than they show it on the TV, and I understand that. And I know if they were actually to pull way out, it would be like a bunch of little ants shooting lasers at each other.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, there's something.
I totally agree. I think that this, what you're saying and what I kind of feel, it's the same thing when we talked about The Hunted. The show is not really capable of showing these action scenes by the way it's directed and the way it has its budget set up. The ship battles in particular are weird, just because of the thing you mentioned, the scale and how slowly the ships are moving, yet they can't seem to hit each other. They miss so frequently, even though things are barely crawling around.
Well, that's another thing, too. It's like they're trying to move out of the way, and Picard's like, "Mr. Crusher, half impulse power starboard." I'm like, half impulse? Dude, just move the fuck out of the way.
I think that's a sense of scale, too, because I'm sure half impulse is probably like a billion miles an hour.
Yeah,
you know? And it's just like it's done to scale. It's so odd. But I think the weirdest... There's two weird things. The first weird thing is that I assume this was scripted, but Picard goes, move to coordinates 170, correction 148. He like changes his, I didn't understand why they made him say a correction into the, unless that was Patrick Stewart just off the cuff and like, I fucked that line up, correction, I'll go here.
Oh, I didn't even think about that as a mistake, or for some reason I actually thought it was like, him, you know, moving the ship again, like so they were on this one path and then they got hit, so he's like, all right, move this way or something like that.
I
didn't even think about it I could be completely wrong. I don't know.
No, I think it's to show that he's really. In this timeline, he's like in total command of or control of everything that's going on the ship. Like he's telling them where to go, where to fire, what to do.
Right.
The responsibilities are really just with him. Everyone else does what he wants them to do. The other weird thing that happens not just only in the final battle, but in the first like skirmish they have where the captain of the ship dies.
Mm-hmm.
Where do all these rocks come from that kill people on the ship?
Oh, I love that. The styrofoam rock cannon that they blast at somebody when they get killed.
And it sticks a ninja throwing star in Captain Garrett's head, and then Riker just gets his throat slit by these rocks.
Yeah, I was watching it with my girlfriend last night, and she's like, "What the hell is that sticking out of her face?" It's like, oh, I think it's supposed to be shrapnel, but yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's there's two random bit of factoid. This ending space battle was actually much like The Hunted, like we just brought up, was supposed to be much more of a bloodbath. Wesley Crusher was written to be decapitated,
Whoa.
Which is crazy. And Data
now, that just sounds like writers having fun with what they don't like about the show.
Right, or something that they know is not going to happen. You know, they're just right, like, yeah. Wesley gets sodomized by like a steel beam, and it's like, oh, Jesus, I don't think that'll happen. And the other thing is Data's console was supposed to explode and electrocute him. There was supposed to be like a crazy electrocution scene with him.
Oh, really?
Did not happen.
Yeah, I don't think you really need to do that.
I think it's kind of what you say. It's just the show is not particularly good at demonstrating these battle scenes. I think Yesterday's Enterprise has done it the best out of any show that they've done mm-hmm. so far, and there's mm-hmm. nothing really wrong with it. It feels a little bit lower stakes than I think we're supposed to believe, even though this one's not that bad.
Yeah, I think the problem. Well, one of the problems with the way that they do these battle scenes is the Enterprise, or I should say Star Trek, does space battles the best when they treat them like submarine battles.
Yep, yep.
Like in the original series, Balance of Terror, that is a great episode. And you're basically watching a submarine movie.
Right.
And I think, you know, when they try to do it more like an X-Wing fight, that's when they kind of... You know, it doesn't really work because you've got these giant ships, but you're trying to get them all onto the screen at the same time. And I was thinking, it's like, well, how much cooler? I mean, obviously, you want to put the Klingon ship on camera so you can, you know, people can see it, et cetera, et cetera. But I was thinking, how much cooler would it be if, like, you know, like I was saying, they're attacking from like half a light year away, so it's the ship's getting hit, and it's like we've got an incoming, you know, torpedo or something, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But you're not, you can't actually see where it's coming from, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
But, you know, obviously, something like that requires a little bit more time.
Yes. Showing the ships all at once really just eliminates the audience's confusion about what's happening. You don't have to explain what the fight is all about.
And, the other thing that was kind of weird about that fight, and I think they do it a lot better in the series finale.
Yep.
Is when Picard jumps over the console and he's like, you know,
not on my watch.
Taste my size 13 steel toed boot, motherfuckers.
I think he says that'll be the day. I think that sounds right. Yep. Yep.
When he starts taking over, they do that like cut to the three Klingon ships just, like, blasting the shit out of the Enterprise.
Yep.
And then the next shot is the Enterprise-C going through the hole. And then the next shot is the timeline straightened out.
Yep.
I was expecting more of a, like, all right, this is it. The Enterprise is about to go down, you know, from inside where shit's blowing up.
I'm real happy you mentioned that. If I was to fix... This is the one thing I would fix about this show. I think that when the Enterprise C enters the timeline in the start of the series, in the start mm-hmm. of the show, it's really excellent how they show the timelines have switched.
Yep.
My thing about, I always, in my mind's eye, if I was directing this episode, I always imagined that, as you're saying, the ship would start to be falling apart. Like the, you know, like you do more shots of like the Klingons are blasting it, like a warp nacelle like breaks off or something.
Right.
And I would have had, I don't know if this would be cheesy. I think Patrick Stewart would be good enough. But I always feel this episode should end with Stewart in much more crazed, screaming like, no, or something like, you know,
something like that.
And then
and then
in the middle of him screaming, it cuts to him being calm, you know, and it's like that drastic change. Like that would be, I feel like it's slightly anticlimactic at the end.
Like tearing open his shirt and like cutting the English cross into his chest with a knife.
He takes like a bat left that's on the thing or whatever and just like carves something into his chest. He
reaches down to Riker's neck and takes some of the blood from it and just smears it on his face like he's about to fight Predator.
I would always add, if I was changing this, I would always add him screaming and then cutting to the...
I am the hand of the demon!
The normal timeline. That's the only...
Witness me and despair!
But that's it. That would be my one change. But I totally agree with you.
Yeah. That's the one thing like that really stands out. And I hate that love story. I really wish they hadn't... I wish they had done it differently. I don't know.
It's funny. Go ahead.
I just think it's so unnecessary, and it kind of undercuts what they do with Tasha, because I mean, she's not explicitly making her decision to go back on the ship because of this guy.
Right, yeah.
But she kind of is.
Right, so you'd keep the same thing but not have a love interest. You'd have her only motivation be that she died a terrible death in an alternate timeline.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, why do you need more than that for? I mean, or at the very least, I mean, I would. I don't think you need to quantify it by having her, you know, get a boner.
That's true. Would you have her... Would you have her become, like, the ranking commander of that ship? Because the way it stands now is that guy kind of serves a double purpose of being a love interest, and he ultimately takes the sort of command position on that ship.
No, I don't think you need to have her take control. I think that would be kind of unrealistic.
Huh.
Well, I mean, maybe not. Okay, let's put it this way. Not unrealistic, but I think it would be too over the top.
That's true, yeah. Yeah.
But I think you can still have that character, and I think you can still have him interact with Tasha, but I just don't think there needed to be the love interest angle. Because it's, you know...
Yeah, like, yeah.
Oh, God, that line about if you ever happen to see a man in his late 50s looking at you across a crowded bus. I was like waiting for him to put his trench coat on before he put Tasha on the plane to get out of Casablanca.
He's like, these Klingons don't amount to a hill of beans, but
it's like, come on, give me a fucking break, man.
I can appreciate that. Yeah.
And making out in the transporter room. Come on.
I think I agree with you. I remembered going into it, I thought there was a lot more between those two. They keep it pretty restrained, which also kind of hurts it because it doesn't build any kind of relationship between them.
If they really wanted to do it well, they would have, in this alternate timeline, they would have him think that he's making headway with Tasha Yar and then have her be like, oh, Lieutenant Castillo, I'd like you to meet my boyfriend, Data.
And Data just like crushes his throat in this alternate timeline. Dead. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, very funny. The one final thing before we wrap up, it's another little example of this one's probably intentional, but it's nice scripting. In the alternate timeline before the battle, Picard is saying the Klingons are approaching without even cloak because they're so confident in their abilities.
Yeah,
and Riker says they should be a little less sure of themselves after the pacing we gave them on Archer 4, and Archer 4 is the planet that Picard at the very end of the show says to go to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is a nice touch.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Is that supposed to be... Is that named after the captain from Enterprise?
Hopefully. Yeah, we can retcon it, too, to absolutely be that case.
Oh, one of my other little tiny favorite things was when the ship first comes out and they're, you know, getting ready to go over to the Enterprise-C, Picard very clearly is like, guys, whatever you do, don't tell them that this is the Enterprise, okay?
Yep.
And then they get to the ship. Crusher's like, we got to get you back to the Enterprise. What the fuck? Were you not there?
Dr. Crusher is not... She's shown a tendency to sort of forget when the Hippocratic Oath comes up. She tends to forget everything else that's happening.
That makes sense. But she seemed to be the least affected by the time change.
She did, yeah.
Well, Geordi... Yeah, I would say Geordi, too.
I think Geordi was much better at conveying that shit is blowing up in engineering than he's ever been in any previous episode. We got a coolant leak! Coolant leak!
Even so, though, it's still, like, in the last episode where he took his sweet time getting over it. Like, the coolant leak blows up, and then he moseys over to the control panel on the wall, opens the door, walks away, and he's like, this doesn't look too good. Boom!
I did think that was funny. I don't know why, because this technology is obviously not real, but he's like, we got a coolant leak, and he goes over and looks at, like, a fuse box, and I was like, that seems like the last thing I'd be looking at.
I also liked, I like seeing things that sort of point out the silliness of the whole concept sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really liked the bit of business that Tasha was doing with, like, some weird circuit board thing.
Yep.
Where clearly she just picked that prop up off the ground.
Yes.
And is just, like, touching the top of it and, like, spinning it around and then puts it back on the ground.
Yeah, I also noticed that, too, when she's doing her, like, tour of the Enterprise-C and they're sort of assessing the situation. She's like, we'll stand here. She's like, what's the shields at? The guy, Shooter McGavin, doesn't check anything. He just goes, shields are at 40. They go, okay, great. She's like, how about we check the photons? She walks over to another console. Doesn't really do anything. And the guy's like, photons are okay. It's like, They're obviously just doing it to add a little bit of the, like, dynamicism, or however you want to pronounce it, to the scene. But there's no reason for them to just be walking between these places.
Also, not to go back to that relationship again, but why, if I had just showed up 22 years in the future and everybody on my ship was dead, I don't feel like I would immediately be like, hey, who's this cute girl?
Yeah, he's...
You know, or at least if I did, I'd keep it to myself.
That's true. He does have bigger fish to fry at this point.
So I know we're about to go backwards through a wormhole and end up 22 years in the past in the middle of a giant space battle.
Yes,
but do you feel like getting a cup of coffee?
End up in a space battle that has caused an explosion so large it shot us back in, or shot us into the future. Like,
it's I did want to talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
As I said before, I thought one of the reasons that the time travel was so tight is because you're in the point of view of the person who's affected by the timeline, as opposed to the actual person going back in time.
Yep.
It's like Back to the Future 2 being in the point of view of Doc Brown as opposed to Marty.
Right.
I'm a little bit – I don't know how to feel about the actual – turning point in the timeline, because it is kind of interesting, and opens up a huge gigantic barrel of worms.
Mm-hmm.
If you're implying that one action at a certain point is the complete skewing of the idea of alternate timelines just makes your brain start hurting when you start trying to figure all that shit out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But I do like that. In order for it to stay as tight as it is, that ship has to be destroyed when it comes back.
Yes. Yeah.
Like they're gone, and it causes the skewed timeline. But it's when they come back, they have to immediately be destroyed in order to write everything.
Yeah.
There's something kind of nice about that. That is usually not the way time travel stories work.
Yeah, and I think an underappreciated fact is that it sort of gets wiped away, but the Enterprise C gets destroyed. The Enterprise D, I'd argue, also gets destroyed. You know, like, those people lose their fight to get the Enterprise C back into time.
Right.
It ultimately resets itself so that it doesn't happen, but mm-hmm. you do have to lose both ships to cause what happens to happen. You know,
right.
Which is kind of cute. It's not particularly anything deep beyond that, but it's sort of an interesting sort of parallel.
Right, and it actually, I was trying to think about whether or not the ending of it is a paradox, because, you know, you've got your the idea that, well, you don't get to the point that we are in the regular timeline without Tasha going back in time to help them, to help them, blow up.
Right, so they have to go through, the whole time travel thing has to happen.
Yep. But I think that's how you get around it, by having the time travelers not be the crew of the ship.
Yep.
Because technically there is no paradox, because everything... now I'm going to get my eyes all crossed. So the everything that happens in the alternate timeline still happens.
Yes.
It's just that... That happening, I don't even know how to explain this now, but you know what I mean.
Right,
the first
storyline coming in, the interaction of the two storylines is what causes the third sort of timeline to happen, which is the normal timeline. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I watched this one and I wonder, can't there just be many alternate timelines? Like, that's sort of like quantum, not quantum theory, but that's sort of the idea. If there are infinite number of reaction to something, you have infinite number of universes where that thing has happened to itself.
Right.
That feels like it's some kind of theory, but that is beyond the scope of this episode.
Oh yeah. So I kind of that, with that in mind, is what I was kind of trying to get at, in that, like, usually when they do this in a story, the thing you'd say is like, oh, well, I mean, when they went back in time to fix everything, how do you know something else didn't change? And
Right.
But the point is that the changed... The altered timeline is the timeline that we are currently in.
Yes.
So Tasha going back and saving everybody or blowing up is what gets us to the point we are in the normal timeline.
Right. Yeah.
So
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So the normal Next Generation flow of time is the altered timeline.
Yep.
Which is an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, no, it's. I think it's very few problems with this time travel. Nothing. There's nothing clearly obvious to me as to why the time travel in this episode doesn't work. Which is
what they what they should have done is when Tasha goes back, Picard should have been played by a young hip actor, and the whole crew would be replaced with younger hip actors.
It should just be Shooter McGavin as captain of the the Enterprise, and they just that would be kind of a
only if the next time they got into a fight with the Klingons, he said, "I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast."
I eat pieces of gah like you for breakfast. The yeah, that would be that's a fascinating. Not that I'm glad it didn't happen, but like if you had a contract dispute with an actor, that would be a great way to reset the show. If you do a time travel thing where he goes back and it somehow changes the past timeline and he's replaced by another character,
yeah,
that'd be kind of interesting. But yeah, let's wrap it up. I'm going to play an audio clip. We're going to come back with our thoughts and feelings about yesterday's Enterprise.
Report, Lieutenant.
Readings fluctuated momentarily. It appeared to be a ship, but then it vanished.
The phenomenon is closing in on itself, Captain.
Very well. Prepare a Class 1 sensor probe. We'll leave it behind to monitor the final closure. Mr. Crusher, lay in a course for Archer 4.
Captain, this is Guinan. Is everything all right up there?
Guinan? Yes, everything's fine. Something wrong?
No, everything's fine. Sorry to bother you. Geordi, tell me about Tasha Yar.
So, Clay, we just got done watching yesterday's Enterprise. We got done talking about it. I think you spoiled it at the start. So what are you going to give this bad boy?
Well, that was my original timeline.
Oh, God, score. It's altered.
But since I've gone back. No, I give it a 5. I mean, there's all of the stuff that we picked apart aside, you can't really dispute that this is not a great episode.
Yeah, I think
sorry,
I agree.
Let me rephrase that. You can't dispute that this is a great episode.
Right. That's what I meant. Yep. No, it's I totally agree. I think all the nitpicks that I come up with really are, like I said earlier, you're getting a minor return on your investment if you were to make those changes.
Yeah.
None of them need to be made. I think the script is super tight. I think the acting is excellent. The set design, all the production, everything. Despite how rushed the production was, it all really came together. I feel like everyone sort of bought into this idea about what the show would. I think if I had to guess, I'd assume the production team really sort of enjoyed the chance to do something totally different with the tone of the show.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if there's any way you could know this, but do you know how much time did they have to do this? Because doing this episode requires a lot of work. Like, you know, they have to, like you said, they have to rework the entire bridge. They have to have a second bridge.
Yep.
They have to, rework a lot of the costumes.
Yep.
Well, I mean, they just make a bunch of belts, I guess. But,
yeah, belts and guns.
But yeah, it seems like it's a ton of work for a weekly show.
It is. It's kind of fortuitous. They did it under pressure because they were hampered by Crosby and Whoopi Goldberg's shooting schedule. That's why they had to write it quickly to get it shot because they could only get
right. Did Crosby have to pick her car up at the...
I assume that means that Whoopi Goldberg was busy and Crosby was just like sitting on a couch eating Doritos and was like, well,
hey,
I'll be around whenever.
She could have been shooting a bunch of episodes of Silk Stockings on USA or something.
She might have been. But outside of that, this was also kind of a lucky timing thing because they were airing this episode during February sweeps, which is...
Oh, I would hope so.
It's kind of a relic of today's age. But back when ratings actually mattered and when people were watching... shows during February would spend a lot more on their episodes or have like sort of big concept episodes to catch people's eyeballs. And so the budget on this episode was higher than normal.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it looks, you know, even if you don't spend a lot on set design, that allows you to spend on people working to, you know, to speed up the process.
Right, right. I would like to say I give this episode overall a 5, but I give it a 1 for use of Tasha.
Oh, okay, that's fine. And this is coming from number one Tasha fan.
Damn straight.
That's right. Well, I'm also going to give it a 5. It's one of the classics. It's definitely a top 5 episode. We'll have to see after everything else is all said and done where I finally rank it. But I'd imagine it would be hard to knock this out of the top 5 when all things are considered. Really clever. Really cool. I can always rewatch this one. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is a great episode Well, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think this is an episode you could show to somebody independently of what they... Because I feel like, as I said last week, or last episode, one of the reasons that this works so well is because you kind of have to know that Tasha is dead.
Yep.
Although, I mean, they do get it across in the episode, so maybe you don't.
No, that's kind of the flaw with my rating system, I guess, where 5 is be like, you can recommend this to anyone. I would not show this episode to anyone who is not familiar with the show. You really have to know Yar, and you have to know the characters to see how different they are for it to be effective. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of tough in that sense, but it is a great episode. It can't stand as a one-off. It relies totally on everything that came before it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, Clay, for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. I'll be back for the next Tasha Yar episode.
Absolutely. That's a unification, maybe? Redemption?
Wait, does she actually come back?
Yes.
Again?
She comes back as Selah, because she does not die in the alternate timeline.
Oh. Well, that changes everything.
Sort of. At this point, if you were to die after watching this episode, it wouldn't change anything. I'll consider that a bit of a change when it comes to, for better or worse, that's what they decided to do. One last bit of trivia for you.
Time travel, man.
This is the last episode, however, to feature all original cast members.
Incorrect. Oh, wait, no, I guess you are right. I was going to say Troy's not in it, but she is in it for 30 seconds.
Yep, She doesn't have a speaking role, but... Yar, or Denise Crosby comes back, but Wesley Crusher is not in those episodes when she comes back.
Oh, really?
Yep. Okay. So there's...
So, but Yar herself, the character, never comes back, right?
We never see, All Good Things. She's in the series finale.
Oh, that's right. Yep. That's right. Yeah. I mean, I don't give a shit if the actress comes back. I just care about the character.
No, the character is not back in any real sense. This is the last we see of her.
Until her sister shows up.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Cool.
I might change my tune about that when my sister shows up.
Well, thank you, Clay. Everyone can go check out Clay at Back in the Village. We did our Prisoner podcast. Mm-hmm. Eat Dead Meat. You can find him on Twitter as well. I'm up there on Twitter. If you guys are watching this show on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes, rating review always helps us. So I'm going to be back with The Offspring next. I don't know who's going to be around to help me for that
the
one.
The band?
Yeah.
That's a big get for you.
Dexter is a huge fan of the Star Trek. The podcast is going places.
Nice.
We're truly in an alternate timeline. Anyway, Clay, see you later.
I will see you in an alternate timeline.